from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. The Palo Alto Unified School District Board of Education is set to vote tonight on whether to rename two middle schools whose namesakes were prominent proponents of eugenics. The vote comes after Yale University recently decided to rename Calhoun College because of its namesake's defense of slavery, and as a number of institutions nationwide weigh whether to relabel buildings originally named after people who espouse racist or other beliefs now considered offensive. We'll take up the issue. When and why should you rename a building? All coming up next after the news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum program. Yale University announced last month that it will rename the school's Calhoun College in response to protests that the namesake of that college, South Carolina statesman John C. Calhoun, was a white supremacist. The college will instead take the name of a computer scientist, a Navy officer, Grace Murray Hopper. Now, Palo Alto here in the Bay Area may join the growing number of communities and campuses that are renaming buildings over the troubling legacies of their namesakes. This evening, the Palo Alto Unified School District Board of Education is set to vote on whether to rename Jordan Middle School and Terman Middle School, both named after prominent advocates of eugenics. As building names are debated in Palo Alto and across the nation, we take up the question in this opening forum hour, when, if ever, should a building or landmark's name be changed? And does doing so risk erasing community history? Joining us to discuss what's going on in Palo Alto, and as I said, we'll extend this discussion and talk about this on a national level, but let me look first locally with Sarah Armstrong, who is with us by phone. She's a member of the advisory committee on the renaming of two Palo Alto middle schools, as I said, and she supports the renaming of the schools and is the parent of an eighth grader at Terman Middle School. And Sarah Armstrong, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Pitch Johnson with us by phone. He's a member of the advisory committee as well on the renaming of the two Palo Alto middle schools. He opposes the renaming of the schools, and he's a 1943 graduate of Jordan Middle School. Welcome, Pitch Johnson.
I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us. Let me begin, Sarah Armstrong, with you, and let's just talk about how things began in Palo Alto. As I understand it, you had a seventh grader who kind of discovered this eugenics connection began a whole movement, really, there with a number of schools, both of them.
That's right. It really started with a seventh grade social studies assignment. The kids were asked to write a biography of a famous historic figure, and one student chose his school's namesake, David Starr Jordan, and he quickly uncovered a very disconcerting history of Jordan's leadership role in the American eugenics movement. Now, this was a movement in the early 20th century that sought to control the purity of American population by eliminating the unfit. They advanced policies for forcible sterilization. Over 60,000 Americans were forcibly sterilized, 20,000 right here in California. They advanced policies to curtail immigration and segregate children into substandard schools, typically based on race or ethnicity. This was obviously absolutely counter to everything we stand for as a community and as a school district. And so a grassroots effort started with a petition, which garnered over 400 signatures to bring the issue before the school board. And out of that, a citizens advisory committee was formed to research the names of all of our schools and to make recommendations. So we really come to the board tonight with two major recommendations. First of all, to teach this history, the understanding of the American eugenics movement and its consequences in our secondary school curriculum, and also, as you mentioned, to rename Jordan and Terman Middle School. Fundamentally, the majority of the folks on the committee believe that this is really about standing for our values as a district and sending a really clear message to students who already feel marginalized.
But you could keep the brand and identity of the name and also teach the history and show the multidimensionality of someone who contributed a great deal but who had this mark and continues to have this mark against him, and avoid the cost, because it will cost to change the name of the school, won't it?
It will, but we believe that we can't effectively disavow the terrible consequences of the American eugenics movement without a name change. Absolutely, cost is a consideration, and we did look into that. And at the end of the day, the school board sets priorities on how to spend money, and they will have to balance all of these things in terms of where they want to spend their money. But what's most important is that we not send a message to our students that we only care about inclusion if it's convenient or if it's free.
And Coverly Community Center is also involved down there in Palo Alto in this, right?
Yes, Coverly was also very much involved in the American Eugenics Movement, but our recommendation is that that community center be renamed if it reopens as a school. So we took the principle that school names, public school names, where we're educating our children, we're asking children to identify with a school, carry a different weight than a community center or a street or a private enterprise.
So let me go to Pitt Johnson then, who is opposed to renaming the school. Pitt Johnson, you're kind of honoring people who obviously stand for things or stood for things that we don't think are honorable by today's standards. What's wrong with changing the name?
Well, the development of eugenics was about 100 years ago, before 100 years ago, and most of David Starr Jordan's activity in that was 100 years ago, ending in 1931 when he died. And I don't know what he thought when he died, but he that was along 86 years ago. So the idea of bringing the ideas of people from that long ago into the present and judging them by what they thought then, I find it not workable or not useful. We think the students would be better served by learning for whom their school was named, teaching them about eugenics. In fact, the whole committee agreed that eugenics should be taught and that the students should understand how it was, and it was a very, now and even then, a very bad piece of science and I think immoral. But it was 100 years ago, so how long in history do you keep judging people for what they believe then? And what we do now, how will people judge us 80 to 100 years from now? You can't know that. So our belief, we finally, four of us or five of us on part of the issue out of the 13, decided that one compromise or one good thing to do, we could keep the name of the school that we all treasure as a symbol, but drop the name of the person to whom it was associated. So one idea would be to take David Starr Jordan Middle School and drop the name David Starr out of it, showing a disconnection with the man, but keep what we consider the symbolic name that means a lot to us. I'm a graduate, as you mentioned earlier in the show, of Jordan Junior High School then, not middle school now, and there's about 14 or 15,000 of us have graduated from Jordan, including my four children. And so we keep the name as a symbol. Then we publicly remove those first two names, showing the students that we are disassociating ourselves from what the people that had these ideas all this time ago. And then we teach history of the eugenics movement, of these people's involvement in it, and we think the students will pay a lot more attention to the history if the at least some connection with the present-day name of the school is kept. The other part of it is most of us have a great deal of affection for those schools, if not for David Starr Jordan himself.
Well, David Starr Jordan was the first president of Stanford University, we should mention. I mean, he was a man of considerable achievements, and do we start, this gets into, and listeners are bound to weigh in on this, this gets into some serious arguments about how you determine not only what Pitt Johnson was just talking about, that is history from the past versus present standards, different morality, different beliefs, and so forth. There's an argument that it's a kind of moral absolutism, and on the other side of the argument, more conservative argument, it says these things happened a long time ago, so forget about them.
Michael, can I?
Go ahead, Sarah Armstrong.
What Pitch is talking about is the notion that historians call presenting, bringing people into the present and judging them by, you know, our standards today. We were very mindful of that and discussed that a lot and agree that humility is warranted in these situations. And so we established some very basic principles, and you mentioned the Yale renaming, and that was going on at the same time, and they had a similar take. And that is, number one, were these ideas contested during the time that these men lived? And the answer to that is emphatically yes. There were scientists who opposed eugenicists, called their theories into question. There were psychologists who validated the malleability of intelligence and benefits of early childhood education and intervention. There were moral opponents and people who were appalled by the imperatives to purify the race, judges, pundits, critics, religious institutions, foreign consulates, not to mention the families and victims of the 60,000 people who were forcibly sterilized. So absolutely in their day, this was contentious. Were they popular? Yes, because men like David Starr Jordan and Lewis Terman used their considerable influence to popularize these ideas. So they were men of action. They were not tourists jumping onto a bandwagon. They actively went out and sought to have laws passed and policies that caused great harm. The forcible sterilization program in California was so effective that it was used by Nazi Germany as a model for their sterilization program.
And we should mention just the numbers here. We're talking about 60,000 people who were sterilized.
60,000 people in the United States, 20,000 in California. Yeah. California outpaced every other state.
Sarah Armstrong, let me actually go back to Pitt Johnson and get his response to what you just defined as the presentness argument, or really the counterargument against presentness. In other words, Pitt Johnson, there were people, indeed, she's absolutely right, that opposed eugenics at the time. So it's not something, for example, some people have said slavery, get over it, it's too long ago, and so forth. When it comes to renaming, we'll hear more about that in the course of this hour, like schools named after George Washington or Thomas Jefferson, let's say. But what about the argument that, of course, there was an abolition movement as well, as far as slavery was concerned, but major arguments against eugenics.
Sarah's factually correct in everything she said, and she has been consistent in that factuality and objectivity during the whole session. You can imagine this committee could have degenerated into a name-calling and a very unhappy group. But I wouldn't say we're all happy, but I think we have respect for the other because they were, I think, honest and appropriate. But my belief is that for those of us who went to Jordan, I agree that the name can be changed by dropping the full name of the school and disassociating ourselves with David Starr Jordan directly, but keep the name that has meant so much to us over the years, a symbol of our important part of our childhood. And so also the students, we think, are more likely, if they keep the name but have it explained for the history of that name, as far as the last name goes, and the reason that Jordan was named the way it was in his time, but we think they're more likely to pay attention to the history, and it is a better reflection on the way things are now. And it's not only the presenting argument, that's a strong one, but I believe that we can preserve something important in our city, both to the students and for many of us that are citizens of Palo Alto, and keep us united around a very, very good town for education.
Let me ask Sarah Armstrong, if I may, Pitt Johnson, sorry to butt in here, but about that as a compromise, it seems, in fact, there was talk about keeping the name of Terman with respect to the son, who, unlike the father, was not a eugenicist, was a Silicon Valley kind of pioneer and so forth. That way, Sarah Armstrong, one could argue, yes, you emphasize the history, you use it for educational purposes, and you avoid all that cost that we were talking about earlier, signage, gym floors, stationery, repainting buses, getting new uniforms, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, there's no buses in Palo Alto, so we won't be repainting any of those. So, But Yes, absolutely. And I also want to echo something that Pitch said, and that is that regardless of how people feel about this issue, we've tried very hard to be respectful and sought to understand where each other are coming from. And so we really appreciate the acknowledgement that something has to be done. These schools cannot be named after these men. And even the minority on the committee that's suggesting this sort of splitting the baby kind of measure of let's just drop the first name and use the surname as a symbolic name, even the minority on the committee, all but one person, believe that we cannot continue to honor these men in our district. Again, with the money, we're talking about... tough budgetary times. We did an estimate of what would be the cost if we did everything at once. And then we came back with, well, what could we do to phase things in over time and just replace things during the natural sort of life cycle replacement? And that's much less. That's closer to $50,000. And, you know, that equates to about $4 a kid. So that is something that the school board will have to weigh.
And the superintendent is on board on both changes, we should mention. That's Max McGee.
That's right.
I want to take this moment, actually, if I could, to invite listeners to join and weigh in on this. As I said, we're going to be talking this in a broader sense because it has become a national issue, obviously, and gets into, we'll hear, in fact, from Matt Haney, who is a former head of the school board here in San Francisco and who has taken a strong position about this, and James Livingston, who's professor of history at Rutgers, who has also taken a fairly strong position. And we do want to hear from you, and let me give you an opportunity now to join the program by calling us at our toll-free number. That number is 866-733-6786. We welcome your phone calls. Again, toll-free, you can join us at 866-733-6786, whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And, of course, you can also go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. A lot of comments already coming in. Let me just go to a few of these. Listener writes, this reminds me of the Communist Party takeover of Vietnam in 1975. They denied Vietnam history, renamed all the schools, streets, and many famous places that bore the names of the scholars, heroes, poets, whatever that are related to their beliefs. Believe me, 100 years from now, these people will replace Washington with a liberal name. Actually, Pitt Johnson, you do hear these arguments that, look, the whole argument about Stanford changing their name because, well, we still haven't changed the Washington Redskins, but, you know, they were the Stanford Indians, now they're the Stanford Cardinals, and that was 45 years ago, and a lot of people don't even remember the Indians' name, yeah?
Well, what's happened in schools that many schools have kept tribal names, the Illini and the Utes and the Seminoles, with the consent of the tribes that bear those names.
Yeah, but you know what I'm getting at here. After a certain passage of time, it doesn't matter, many people argue, right? You change the name and yeah.
I disagreed with it, although I was a good friend of the president, so I supported him. But I thought, if the Indian was treated respectfully and not as some sort of childish mascot, the name could have been kept. Pop Warner came here from Haskell Institute, I believe it was, and brought the name Indian. But we've gotten over it, and I'm used to Cardinal. But I didn't like the change because I felt that it did not have to be a childish mascot. It could be a dignified, brave symbol, which many of us characterize the Indians in that way.
All right. Sarah, I'm sorry. You want to say something here? Go ahead.
I think that we wrote about that in our report. Yeah. And at the time, replacing that very racist symbol, it's not about honoring, that was not about honoring Native Americans. It was a Native American group of students in the minority who brought that to Stanford, right? It was an incredibly racist mascot, and the San Francisco Human Rights Commission did a study in 2007 that showed that cultural misappropriation of Native American symbols and mascots causes great harm. The Student Senate at Stanford, and as Pitch mentions, the president stood against the tide. And there were outraged alumni at the time who were furious about that change. Now you look at that symbol, you can't show that one of those symbols to your kids. It was completely racist. Again, that was very controversial. As Pitch mentioned, he was against it too, right? But we see that you absolutely can make these changes to validate and our own values, and send a very clear message to all students that we believe in their potential and worth. And like many issues regarding equity and inclusion, it doesn't necessarily directly impact the majority of kids. Those with the privilege of race in class will be fine either way. We're concerned about the historically underrepresented, marginalized, under-resourced families and kids with learning differences and the kind of message we're sending to them.
You're hearing the voice of Sarah Armstrong, a member of the advisory committee on the renaming of two Palo Alto middle schools. Pitch Johnson is also with us and also a member of that advisory committee. And Rebecca writes, I attended Jordan Middle School in seventh grade. After my seventh grade year, Palo Alto closed Jordan and merged everyone into a single school, newly named Jane Lathrop Stanford. That's where I met a friend, a woman of color, whose mother had been forcibly sterilized in 1972. She's recently written several articles on her mother's experiences and its effect on her and her entire family. Eugenics is not ancient history. It's quite recent. Names are meaningful. Kids see everything and make deductions from these lessons that guide their entire lives. Why not change the names? Well, we'll hear from you, our listeners, on this. And if you're on the line, hang on. We will try to get to as many of you as we can. A lot of people with strong feelings, obviously, about this. And as I said, we'll hear from Matt Haney, who's here with us in studio, who's a commissioner with the San Francisco Board of Education and has proposed a number of name changes for San Francisco schools. And James Livingston, professor of history at Rutgers University in New Brunswick, who's been listening all this time. A couple of more comments. Steve writes, the Terman Middle School in Palo Alto is named after both Lewis Terman, who introduced intelligence testing to America and did more than anyone to shatter negative stereotypes about gifted children, and his son Fred Terman, Dean of Engineering at Stanford and probably the most deserving of the title of Father of Silicon Valley. A compromise was offered of dropping Lewis Terman's name from being honored while keeping the name Terman and only honoring Fred, but it has been decided that the intellectual sins of the hereditary father must be inherited by the son, so the family name must be expunged from memory. Some strong feelings about this, as I said, as you can well. And one more comment from a listener named Laura who says, why do you name a building after someone? To show respect? If you don't respect the person anymore, that gesture should be undone. I understand that history is important and historical figures live with different social norms, but the building is not in a bubble. Those norms are not accepted and those figures should not be honored in that way. Well, hang on. We're going to continue this discussion. As I said, we're going to have you involved in it. We're going to talk with Matt Haney and James Livingston. Stay tuned. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Palo Alto School District voting this evening on renaming two middle schools. So we're talking about that. And we're also talking about the national debate about naming schools. And it is, in many instances, not only locally, but nationally, a fierce debate. Do you honor people who perhaps did things that by today's standards are deemed to be dishonorable? It really, in many instances, gets down to that argument. And if you do, are you essentially countenancing it or their deeds, if you will, or their actions or their words for that matter? And we get into certainly a lot of historical examples here. It's difficult to go back in time to major historical figures and not find often serious violations of human rights, but also anti-Semitism and racism and misogyny and all of those kinds of things. Let's bring Matt Haney into this discussion. He's a commissioner with the San Francisco Board of Education. He's here with us in studio. He's proposed name changes for some San Francisco schools and actually had a bit of a firestorm when he was on O'Reilly a while back, talking about maybe naming George Washington School after Maya Angelou. That was, I think, something that hit a lot of people out there in the hinterlands.
It did indeed, although there were a lot of people who also were very supportive of it. And I think what we need to be able to do is have a conversation. You know, props to Palo Alto to really bringing this conversation to their community, to involving teachers and parents and students. I think we need to be able to have the courage to actually talk about this. You know, as a school system, we serve our kids, all of them. We're responsible for their educational success and opportunity. And a huge part of that is making sure that they feel valued when they walk into our schools and that they feel seen, that they matter, that they know that their communities matter, their history matters, their past matters, their present matters, their future matters. And some of how that is communicated is through our school names.
Where do you draw the line, though, Matt? That becomes a question for many people. And how far back do you go historically and all that sort of thing? Because let's face it, Jefferson and Washington were slave owners, and their names are on so many buildings throughout the country, especially schools.
Well, I don't think we're in any danger of no longer recognizing their contributions. I think what we need to do is focus less on the past and start talking about how we unleash the beauty and diversity and the contributions of the present. Maya Angelou was someone who grew up in San Francisco, an incredible poet, someone who we should recognize. And I think from talking to students and people in the community, by upholding her, we're also saying something to our kids about who they can be and about their futures. And so sometimes we talk about rewriting the past, but actually we need to think about our present. Our school district here in San Francisco is over 90% students of color. It's half girls. They also need to see themselves in our schools. They need to see themselves in our curriculum, and they need to see themselves on our school buildings. And I think we can have that conversation in a mature way without having to say, you know, somebody in the past was all bad or all good. We have to create space for the full diversity and the full set of contributions of our community.
And again, Matt Haney's commissioner with the San Francisco Board of Education and has proposed name changes for some schools in San Francisco. I want to bring James Livingston, and then I'm going to go hear from you, our callers. And James Livingston is professor of history at Rutgers University in New Brunswick and has written about this whole subject. And James Livingston, again, I read what you have to say on this, and I came away with a strong sense that you really do kind of have to determine where to draw the line. You've mentioned in your article, for example, that by today's standards, certainly Abraham Lincoln, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, just to mention a few, were racist.
Okay, well, look, I've been listening very carefully and been taking notes. I used to be a good student, no longer, but that's okay. Let me work backward from what Matt Haney just said. You know, the focus on the present. Let's focus on the present. We don't need to think about, you know, let's not go back to the past. I think that's a fundamental mistake. I think that's the real problem. That I agree with both Ms. Armstrong and Mr. Johnson in their. Here's what they agree on. They agree on three things. First, that this person, David Starr Jordan, you know, represents a violation of everything we stand for. Second, they both said, we need to teach this history. And third, they talked about the cost of rewriting history. And that's where Matt Haney ends up. Okay, can we rewrite history? My very strong opinion now is, yeah, we can. And therefore, I would retract what I said in the Chronicle of Higher Education and say, yeah.
Wait a minute, you're rewriting history. That sounds uncomfortably like Kellyanne Conway talking about alternate facts. Are there alternate histories to rewrite here?
Yes, of course there are. I mean, God, you know, I mean, come on. You know, facts aren't like pieces of gravel, you know, for us to grab, you know, as we bend over. Of course, you know, of course there are alternative facts. The question is not, what are the facts? The question is, okay, where do they come from? And how do you decipher them? And look, I mean, you know, once upon a time, it wasn't a fact that the Earth revolved around the sun, and everybody believed that. You know, I mean, why is that? Why is that controversial? I don't, you know. I mean, sure, the woman is a moron, and Donald Trump is quite possibly a fascist. So what? Deal with the arguments. Don't pretend that they're stupid and we're not. That's, you know, I guess I'm way too excited about that.
Well, I'm also just wondering what you say when you're talking about, I mean, there are all kinds of revisionist theories about history and rewriting history. And
sure.
Matt Haney has something to say here. Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I agree. We do have to talk about our past. And I think one of the most common historic inaccuracies is that the only people who've contributed to our history in significant ways are white wealthy men. I mean, I think what we're trying to do here is have a fuller picture of who has contributed and who's built the society and who has contributed to our community. So if we're only having white men on our school buildings, we're not actually telling history accurately. And I think every day that we do that, that's what rewriting history is. So I think what we're trying to do is have a fuller picture of our history.
Let me quote James Joyce, but I'll paraphrase a little bit. History is a nightmare from which we're trying to escape. And I think that bears serious scrutiny here. But let me bring some of our callers in here. We got a caller from China. Lars, are you actually in China, calling us from China?
Yes, sir, that is correct. My name is Lars Johnson. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
So I'm calling because I have a very vested interest in the topic. It was my son that wrote the book report that launched a petition to consider the renaming. I just wanted to quickly give you a heads up on how this worked and what we experienced throughout the process. And Sarah and Pitcher have explained it very well. But what happened when I read this book is that I realized there's a tremendous disconnect between the values the school district espouses of preparing every child equally to its fullest potential and the namesakes, legacies, and the values we honor, where they say intelligence is an inherited trait. If you're not white, you're not bright. And that is unacceptable. In fact, they went so far to spearhead negative eugenics, which is not just a form of looking for all the people with blue eyes, but that is a form where they say, if you don't fit into our mold, we prefer you not being here. We prefer you sterilized so you don't reproduce. David Starr Jordan, was an outspoken leader of this movement. He wrote one of the very first books talking about minorities being a menace to society and decaying the race just by them being there and reproducing. And that is just terrible. What message do we send to our school children, 50% of whom are minorities? And we brought this issue to the school board, and they were kind enough to institute this committee to allow us have this debate that was well summarized by Sarah and Pitch earlier on the call. But I think what it really goes back to is also something that was said earlier, is what environment does this create? How welcome do these children feel when they walk through these gates and they get into a district and a school where somebody's being honored that had no respect for them at all? What does it tell these kids, especially after we had this debate? How can we move on and say, the school is not David Starr Jordan Middle School, it's just Jordan?
Yeah, Lars, you're raising some important points here, and it's really good to hear from you calling us all the way from China. I'm most appreciative of that, and I thank you. And his son was the one who started this all. Actually, Charlie writes, this is a suggestion that might take under advisement. How about renaming Jordan for civil rights leader Barbara Jordan? Let me get another caller in here, though, while we have a moment here. And Marissa is next. Marissa, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I just wondered what your guests thought about just the potential erasure of history. I mean, you know, these students wouldn't have even known about eugenics if the school hadn't been named after this guy. And we can all agree it's terrible, but do we really want to just every terrible figure in history sweep it under the rug so nobody remembers it anymore? And I'll take my comments off.
All right, let me go to you. Go to the historian on this. James Livingston, Professor Livingston. Yeah.
Do I believe in the erasure of history? No, I actually make a living from teaching this stuff. So no, I mean, no. But the point is that we're constantly rewriting history. I mean, Calhoun was a respected figure for a very long time in terms of political theory, in terms of the good old cause of slavery, for a long, long time, for a century. Okay, and now we've come to the realization that his idea of the Constitution and of the nation, of the Union, or whatever you want to call it, was fundamentally flawed. And why? Because there was an argument. Because the abolitionists opposed it, because Lincoln opposed it, because we have come to see that this is just, you know, that his ideas about, like, the founding were ludicrous. So, no, you can't. There isn't any way to erase the past, but there is a way to change the past. Look, I mean, to be, you know, to simplify this thing, before W.E.B. Du Bois wrote Black Reconstruction, published in 1935, the predominant voice in my profession in history was William Dunning. And his argument was that the Civil War was an unnecessary tragedy and that Reconstruction was a farce. Okay, well, that interpretation of these great events lasted until the 1960s. Why did they change? Why did this interpretation change? Because there was this thing called the Civil Rights Movement. That's why. It's not... these interpretations are not immune to social movements or social pressure or anything like that. And so when we talk about, when Sarah Armstrong talks about the renaming these schools, when we all, what we're addressing, it seems to me, is the very idea that, like, we can rewrite the past, and it's not such a bad thing. We don't stop arguing about it. We don't stop mentioning John C. Calhoun or this Jordan person. We don't stop talking about him. But we don't worship at the shrine either.
Well, you mentioned Sarah Armstrong, and actually I'm looking at a tweet here that I want to get in the mix and go back to you, Sarah Armstrong, on this. A listener says, let me guess, the same group behind changing the school name get to determine the new names? Convenient. I think that's a kind of criticism there, but you're going to have probably some serious reckoning to just decide what names replaced those names, aren't you?
So that was actually out of scope for our committee. We were asked to make recommendations on whether to change any of the school's names. And if the board takes the decision tonight to do that, we will then I don't know if you can hear it.
I can hear it. And
I don't know what that is. But then they will constitute new committees. And what we're suggesting is those committees should be primarily of kids and staff, students and staff, at the schools to really reflect the values of their specific school sites. So no, that was out of scope.
What about Pitt Johnson on this? Could I go to you on this, Pitt Johnson? Renaming a school? How do you feel? Where do you stand?
Hello?
Are you there, Pitch? All right, let me read a comment on the iPad. This is Brian who writes, I graduated from Yale in 1990 and was in what was called Calhoun College for my last 2 years. The name change means a lot to me. When I was there, some of the students were beginning to express discomfort, not just with the Calhoun name, but with the stained glass window depictions of slavery that were in some windows at the college. What's interesting as an alum is that I now have a decision to make, according to the Yale press release announcing the change. Furthermore, alumni of the college may continue to associate themselves with the name Calhoun College or may choose to claim Grace Hopper College as their own. And some more comments. A lot of comments in favor of change. Tom says, please remember, as you hold on to the nostalgia of your childhood in Palo Alto, these schools are about the kids and our future, not your past. Laura writes, why do you name a building after someone? To show respect. If you don't respect the person anymore, that gesture should be undone. And Casey says, these are all valid arguments from the panel on why these school names must be changed. But where does one draw the line? Many of the founding fathers owned slaves. You could readily argue that Thomas Jefferson raped his slaves. Do you strip their names from the schools and monuments? How much evil is too evil, and how much is just how things operated at the time? Let me go to some more of our callers, and we'll go next to Palo Alto. Nadja, you're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to say, you know, as a caller already mentioned, more than 50% of our district identifies as non-white. And I feel like in today's current environment, more than ever, this is a way we can affirm our current values of diversity and inclusion and equity. And we can show courage. It's a teachable moment. We teach our kids to be upstanders and not bystanders. And as adults, we have to practice what we preach. The district is likely to adopt teaching eugenics to new generations of students, and these were leaders in the eugenics movement. This is not a passive thing, right? Once David Starr Jordan has the name recognition of an Adolf Hitler, you know, for these students, how can we as a community claim to be inclusive when given a chance to change a name and we don't do it, right? I mean, once the name recognition is there, you can't drop Adolf and not think Hitler and understand who that is, right? It's not who our community is, and as Sarah Armstrong can probably tell you from what the report says, you know, it's actually what the students want, and shouldn't that matter? I mean, I'm with them.
Okay. I thank you for expressing yourself, and I'm going to go right to another caller, and it's Bene. Bene, you're on the air.
Hi, I went to Coverley. I graduated from Coverley in 1966, and I am an African American. So we were my sisters and I and a couple of friends were amongst the first African Americans in Palo Alto, because Palo Alto did have restrictive covenants on buying property. So my parents found it very difficult to buy a home in Palo Alto. But when I went to school there, there were a number of students who did not appreciate having a diversified student population, and that telegraphed very clearly to us. And as a youngster, you're developing a sense of yourself, who you are, your self-worth. And my parents had to work very hard to give us that backbone to continue. And I don't know that many parents would do as good a job as my parents did.
All right. I thank you for expressing yourself. And I think we have Pitt Johnson on the line now. Pitt, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. You've been hearing these kind of testaments, and I wonder what your response is to them from, you know, people of color who say this is very important to us, these name changes, and they really mean a lot.
Well, we had quite a few students of color, namely black, when I was at Jordan. But my argument isn't so much that David Starr Jordan was a good guy or that his ideas were good. They weren't. They were immoral and unscientific. My arguments have to do with keeping the name of a school that we all, as a symbol that that we loved from then, and having the community retain its love for that school in general. I don't think we should. So we developed a compromise, as you know. We don't have to go through it again, but I think we can keep the names of the schools without keeping the names of the guys. One other point I'd like to make quickly is that we all are benefiting from the prosperity of Silicon Valley. There's hardly a family here that's not benefiting from it. And that prosperity was created by Stanford University, started by David Starr Jordan in a way, and by Frederick Terman. So we can't ignore the fact we're living from the benefits of those gentlemen. But basically, I think we can drop their names of the eugenicists and keep the last name of the schools we love.
Well, I have a caller here named Dennis who actually wants to go on record about Terman and Terman's keeping its name or not keeping its name. Dennis, go ahead. You're on the air with us. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Thanks. So I'm a parent in the Terman community, and, you know, I think we have received very little information about Frederick during this process. It's all been about Lewis. Even in classes, when they talk to our students, it was all about Lewis, very little about Frederick. You know, he's the father of Silicon Valley. I think he's a great namesake. He's on the school. And so it just feels like he's getting sort of thrown under the bus here because of his last name. And I just don't think that's a good message to our students, that we judge people based on their last name.
All right.
I think there is a...
Sarah Armstrong, can we get you to respond to that call?
So Terman was the third middle school in our community, and it was founded in 1958, and it was named for Lewis Terman, the father, the eugenicist. The school closed during a period of decreased enrollment in the 80s and 90s, and when it opened in 2001, the task force that was that reopened the school decided to name it Terman Middle School in honor of both the father and son. We found out much later, like a few weeks ago, that one of the reasons that Frederick Terman was added as an honorific of our school was because the committee was very concerned about Lewis Terman's eugenics legacy. So he was added as a sweetener to make the bitter pill of his father's eugenics legacy go down a little bit easier. But that was not made public.
So we believe very clearly, and we have a long history of renaming schools in Palo Alto, by the way. Many of our schools have been renamed. And typically that was done to foster a sense of shared community when two school populations merge together. We believe very strongly that we can rename Terman without denigrating Frederick Terman. Had the school only ever been named after Frederick Terman, we wouldn't be having this discussion. There's not a problem with Frederick Terman.
Yeah, the caller thinks you're throwing him under the bus, though.
Well, we're not throwing him under the bus. Absolutely not. The school, for 60 years, has been associated with his father.
All right. Let me thank Dennis for calling. I want to go to more of your calls. So we're going to go to San Mateo next. Brooke, welcome. You're on the air.
Thanks. Congratulations, Matt, for all of your hard work on the school board. I think that semantics are really important. Your second guest keeps talking about rewriting history. I don't think that that's what we're suggesting, but we're not a stagnant society. We are always changing. I think we need to reanalyze history. We have a responsibility to analyze history according to what our present is like.
All right. I thank you for going on record there. Does our historian want to respond, James Livingston?
I couldn't agree more. I think that's exactly right. I mean, the past looks different because the present is different than the past, and we wouldn't even think historically if the present wasn't different from the
past. You got to read Faulkner to realize the present is the past or the past is the present. But let me go to Matt Haney, who wanted in here. Matt, go ahead.
No, I agree with that. I think, you know, when we think about our founders and in some cases a lot of these people who become at the center of these controversies, they actually believed in challenging tradition. They believed in challenging orthodoxy. And I think in many ways they would be surprised to learn that we're fighting hundreds of years later to keep their names on buildings. And I think what we need to do is, as the caller said, recognize that democracy does mean change, and it means having our values and who we are reflected at the highest levels. And I think when we've seen that happen in our schools, names like Harvey Milk, Alice Fong Yu, Korematsu, these are names recognizing people who I think have a special value to our community and to our kids. And when that happens, it affects what's happening in the school in a positive way.
Was it a bad strategy for you, though, to choose George Washington, father of our country?
I think it started a conversation. I think it was also about Maya Angelou. But it was an important way for people to say, you know what, let's have this conversation. And, you know, I think that ultimately, as has happened in Palo Alto, it's a positive thing for the community when we can reflect on our past, but also talk about our present and hear from our kids, hear from our students, hear from our families about their experiences in the schools.
And a tweet from Jen, who says, it is so very telling that the repudiation of these founders originated as a student movement. Listen and give them their voice. And Claire writes, a minority middle schooler will not be consoled by two names dropped, degradation by any name. And let me go to more of your calls. We'll go next to Ashley. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I don't disagree at all with the spirit or intention of renaming these schools. My question is about the resources financially that it takes to do so. And in an age when our public schools are so strapped as it is, I'm just wondering, you know, the impact of that money, could it not be more impactful being spent on, for example, arts education, which is being dropped in the schools? And I used to work, you know, for a visual arts nonprofit that brought artists into schools because there was no more arts funding. I mean, I don't object to maybe people calling it something different or renaming it over a period of time or scratching out the name on the building and calling it something. But when you're talking about spending money, you know, where should our priorities be right now?
Well, it's a good and important question. It's one, in fact, that I've tried to put in the mix here a number of times, and in fact, others are putting in the mix. Mark writes, most importantly, the renaming of this school and others that honor the names of those who purported evil ideas is to send a message to Representative Steve Kings of the world that their racist ideas are not going to be tolerated, and the cost of having those ideas will be a harsh judgment. If you don't have the money to make the physical changes to the school, crowdfund it. I'll chip in for sure. Matt Haney, you want to weigh in?
Yeah. No, I think there's a way to do it over time. And, you know, it also costs a lot when these schools are places that are not welcoming for all of our kids, and they drop out and we're not fulfilling our purpose. So if this is important, we should commit to it. But I agree that we have to do it in a smart, you know, way that understands the costs involved. So I like what Palo Alto is talking about in terms of doing it a little bit over time and phasing it in. And it's not as actually as expensive as people would say.
I've always been an advocate, as many listeners know, of TransBay and hearing from, I mean, we're hearing from Palo Alto. We're hearing now from Matt, who has been located in San Francisco. Here's a listener who's in Oakland who writes, I'm a graduate of McChesney Junior High in Oakland. When I went back to visit many years later, I found out that it has been renamed after Edna M. Brewer, who was the principal of the school when I attended. I don't think anyone had a huge problem with renaming the school, nor was any vital history lost by the action. As a student, I never figured out who the namesake of McChesney even was. All right, here's another caller. Jennifer, join us. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I am the parent of two high school students in San Francisco public schools, one at Wallenberg, which I'm happy about that name, one at Lincoln, which I could take it or leave it, even though I was born on his birthday. My kids are both white and middle class. One is male, and I'm in full support of changing the names of the school. Changing a name is not rewriting history. And I think it's, like you said, it's a cost that's worth it if it instills more pride in the students and if it means something to the students.
Jennifer, well said. I'm sorry I have to interrupt her because we are coming really short on time and I have to go back. Sarah Armstrong, with seconds left to you. Where's this going tonight? What are you expecting?
I will take the lessons of November and not count any votes before they're cast. But everything about I know about this school board is that they're committed to advancing equity and inclusion. I'll be shocked if they don't include eugenics in the curriculum. And I think that we can do better and we can send a message to our kids.
Well, we'll continue to follow this story. I thank Sarah Armstrong and Pitt Johnson and Matt Haney and James Livingston. And thank you, our listeners. We would not be here without you. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. In the next hour, we're going to talk about tides and the ocean and really the science and spirit of the ocean with author Jonathan White. Stay tuned for that. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.